Okay, let's get straight then into Municipal Watch. Today, thankfully, there's no back and forth and jostling with officials in municipalities. We have Mielane Holeni, who's a Chief Group Advisor at Ntiso Consulting Group. He's a local government revenue and governance expert. So he's here to help us reground the conversation. Mielane, good morning. Always a pleasure having you in studio.
Good morning, Kathy, and good morning to the listeners. And I look forward to hearing all the great stories or questions coming out from the listeners.
Of course, Mielane, since the last time you were in studio, I think we've had the opportunity of looking into four municipalities. And what continues to be clear is that the dysfunction that exists at a local government level, in some municipalities, it is deteriorating. Last week we had we were focusing on the Matlosana local municipality, and it is just unbelievable some of the things that are happening. So let me give you an example of one or two. So you have a ward councillor that was arrested 9 months ago, but is still earning a salary from the municipality. How does something like that happen? How is a situation like that even allowed to happen? You then also have the CFO of the institution, who has been charged, arrested, appeared in court, is out on bail, and is still in their position as the CFO of this institution. How is it that situations and scenarios like that can unfold and there's seemingly no action? And this is where our conversation really fits in today, around professionalizing local government, because these things are barely unheard of if we're talking about what should be happening in a corporate and professional setting. But I don't know, maybe it's allowed to because that's just what happens in municipalities. You're the expert here.
Well, Kathy, I think that is a mouthful, and I think from where we stand, and I always would like to draw parallels, because an institution such as, you know, the in the public sector, particularly in local government, you know, I always refer to it as a business within government because of, you know, the functions that it has. So in many ways, it mirrors what a private company would look like, a board of directors, which would be obviously the councillors, the mayor, and so on and so forth, the company secretary, and so on and so forth, which, you know, and directors, and so the parallels between a municipality are even more far-reaching in terms of, you know, the standards that is expected of people that should be working within a local municipality. So, number one, legislation is very clear around, you know, misdemeanors, around, you know, non-compliance, around, you know, vetting of, you know, people who should be fit and proper to occupy office. You know, so some of those issues, I think, are issues that, you know, should not be even heard of because of the fact that, you know, legislation is clear and there is a precedence that has been set over the years in terms of how a public official should carry themselves, how a political leader should carry themselves as well. So in terms of, you know, all of the prescripts, you know, you can go into the Structures Act, you can go into the MFMA, you can go into all of, you know, the statutes, you know, emanating from the Constitution. It's clear that, you know, anyone who occupies public office must be of a certain standard, as well as a certain, you know, at least, you know, responsibility. But the issue here is, you know, professionalizing the public service means that there must be consequences that are always applied. And difficult as it is, gray as it could be, consequence management is what is required to make sure that the public service also has recourse and people take accountability, and those that must take responsibility do so. And before they are even called out, they are even able to take the moral high ground in some of these issues.
Why is it so hard to effect consequences at a local government level. So if the law is clear, if there are clear guidelines on what should happen in instances, particularly where we're talking about, yes, people might still have cases and trials to go through, but if you have an individual that is convicted of a crime and is behind bars, but is still earning a salary from the municipality, that is highly problematic, I would think.
Yeah, I think highly problematic, and that's correct. And I think that is now comes to the next issue. You know, I talk about capability. Capability, in that capability, there's leadership. So then you must look at, you know, the leadership that is in place. You must be able to understand what kind of leaders are there that are going to effect all of the statutes as they are required, as they are sworn in, as part of the legislation, as part of defending the constitution, as part of implementing the legislation. So then it means that in the capability aspect, the leadership aspect plays a huge role towards the professionalization of a public office or any office for that matter. So the leadership that has credibility, the leadership that leads from the front, and the leadership that is not afraid to break any kind of alliances or allegiances, mm-hmm. to be able to do the right thing. So leadership, you know, in many instances is about doing the right thing. Management is about doing things right. So that is the key difference about, you know, a leader. And I think from a leadership point of view, is about taking a stand.
Mm.
And in oftentimes, you know, in the leadership, you know, space, if a stand is not taken, a stand is automatically being taken. So you are able to surmise, you know, the fact that, you know, if you don't say yes, you know, it means, you know, you are almost saying no in a way. So if you're not taking a stand, it means you are allowing chaos, or you are promoting a laissez-faire type, you know, culture. So it also goes, you know, into how leaders create a culture of accountability, a culture of taking responsibility, and a culture of people knowing without being asked, you know, that this is definitely not allowed and it's not going to be condoned. But I think, you know, I must highlight a point, you know, which is, you know, whether it's on both sides of the fence from a political leadership point of view, as well as from an administrative, you know, point of view. I think some of the personal relationships that, you know, get formed where, you know, their alliances, you know, I align with so-and-so and so on, they tend to muddy, I think, the professionalism within a particular space. Because, Kathy, if I'm a diehard supporter of you, I should be able to tell you, Kathy, this is wrong. Kathy, let me advise you, if you want to do things right, this is how you can achieve it. But it should not be me treating you like a demigod if I so much care and I so much, you know, align with you and I so much, you know, see that, you know, you have the right values, unless if it's the opposite of what the situation is. So I think that is the issue around the capability. The leadership aspect, I think, is the one that we should be looking at, because they say a fish rots from the head. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You know, everything else that happens will follow suit. So the leadership and the quality of leaders that are there, that are leading the institutions, I think there's a lot, you know, of fingers that should be pointed at them. And this is now an opportunity for them to take a stand. And some of, you know, the if they take a stand, it may be for difficult issues. And to be a leader, you're not elected to deal with simple issues.
Mm-hmm.
You are elected to deal with very difficult issues, which may be gray at times, which may be legal at times, which may be moral, which may be, you know, all of those aspects, you know, that, you know, build and engender a public service that, you know, will then take a cue as to how things, you know, flow from there.
Melanie, if we look at just how relationships have unfolded at a local government level, it has lended itself to very much being about allegiances, to it very much being about loyalty, right? Because if we look at even the processes of who becomes mayor, who doesn't become mayor, who becomes municipal manager, who becomes CFO, all of it now seems to fall along lines of patronage and how we know that we have people in the system that are lined up who are going to serve our interests, whoever our might be in this instance. And so if you're saying that it is that very idea that makes it difficult to professionalize local government, then it means that the problem we're sitting with is a bigger problem. But then it's also not just an institutional problem, it's a political problem.
So I think, you know, the way to break the issue down, and I'm centering on leadership, but leadership by its own nature will emanate from somewhere. You know, you will be a political leader, you can be a community leader, you can be a union leader, you can be any of those areas which require one to be a leader. Of course, you will come with the influences that, you know, emanate from the home that you belong to or from the corner that you come from, whether it's, as I said, political or union and so on and so forth. You know, those tend to permeate. So I think then for us is the question that says, what of the manifesto that is put up by the political parties? Is that not the standard that is supposed to be guiding each and everyone in terms of how they should discharge their duties? What of the when you get sworn in and you make, you know, those promises, are those not the, at least the standards that you must always remember whenever you have to make, you know, decisions? So here I'm saying, in an institution, to quarantine all of the other external factors, there are internal as well as, you know, guiding documents or guiding policies that each and everyone should be able to say, hang on, I come from a union, a political party, or a community-based, you know, organization, but I am coming into an institution that must be quarantined of all of the influences that I have. Yes, the fact that, you know, we have put up, you know, a particular line of wanting to contribute to developing the municipality is understood. But the way then the decorum of it, you know, the practices of it, you know, you want to create then an environment that accommodates and ties up each and every one of the people there. And that's why, for instance, as I emphasize the issue of taking an oath, as well as, you know, going through interviews as an accounting officer, you go through specific questions. But one thing I also want to add as well is that, you know, at the point of people entering into an institution, it is very important what gets done for them to be qualified or to be vetted or to be tested and so on, so that when they are inside, we should not have the surprise element of now having issues that, you know, crop up, you know, with that particular individual or group of individuals and so on. So I'm also advancing the fact that, you know, it matters what happens, how people then enter into an institution, so that they get to understand and at least see the guiding principles of how they should carry themselves. It should not just be academic. So that is the one aspect which I believe that not a lot of work is done to drive the culture of those institutions to a point where you understand that you are quarantining yourself from the other influences when you have to make a decision. It's not a political party decision, but this is a citizen and a country decision in a way. So I think those are some of the aspects that ought to be looked at, you know, within the leaders that we have. So obviously we are human beings. Alliances, allegiances, and so on and so forth are things that perhaps could keep us, you know, afloat. But as I say, how and who enters the institution, this is where I think the public scrutiny needs to be at least playing a greater role, and not wait for people to sit in office and commit, you know, something, and only then do we then wake up. So we need to also play the proactive role of making sure that those people that come in, whether they've come in on whatever ticket, there's a better understanding and a firmer understanding of what they are going to contribute and what their history is, and how, you know, if it's, you know, taking a look into how what their assets they have, we must know the sum quantity of those people who are coming in, because that tends to at least point a picture of what kind of leaders are they going to be.
All right. We'll continue the conversation with Mielani Holeni in a moment. Of course, I'll also take some of your calls. Today for Municipal Watch, we're looking at professionalizing the local government. What are some of the challenges realistically that get in the way of this professionalization. So I'll also take your calls on 086-000-2032, on the WhatsApp voice note line 0614-104-107.
SAFM 104 to 107 nationwide, leading the conversation.
We continue the conversation on The Talking Point. Municipal Watch today, we're talking about professionalizing local government. Mielani Holeni is our guest. He's a chief group advisor at Ntiso Consulting Group. He's a local government revenue and governance expert. So, Mielani, before, because I see that we've already started getting some people, some of our listeners that want to be part of the conversation, but for me, the elephant in the room around professionalization of local government is the seeming inability to depoliticize local government. And it's something that is often spoken about. So if you go to the Public Service Commission and some of the reports that they've put together around professionalizing the public service across the board, there's a lot that said about how politicized our public service has become. At a local government level, is it possible to depoliticize local governance?
And I think, you know, the clear answer is no. I mean, the local government, as you say, they represent councillors in all the makings that, you know, they are elected, you know, from a particular political party. Of course, you know, there's an emergence of, you know, ratepayers associations and other ways and means that, you know, people can make it into council. But in the fundamental is that, you know, you are put forward by your own political party, and therefore you are representing the interests of the political party. Now, the conundrum is that representing the interest of the political party, what do you make of the interest of the people that you are representing? Is it making an assumption that they are always aligned to your party's political line? Or is it understanding that I am representing a people that may sometimes not even care about politics, but care about the basics? So if you flip the script in that particular way, is you want to understand exactly who am I representing? Does it matter that they support party yellow or party Y or party K or party black or party this? Because in the heart of it, what do people actually want from their representatives? They want people who have integrity. They want people who are honest. They want people who talk to them, people that, you know, will at least, you know, inform them, people that, you know, will raise their grievances and so on. And they want officials who are going to fix the taps. They are going to make sure electricity, you know, is there. The potholes, you know, are not there in the streets, and so on and so forth. And I think that is where, for instance, if you talk about the depoliticization of local government, we will not be able to achieve it with the current political system that or government system that we have. However, I think, you know, what we should be pushing more is, as citizens, what are citizens doing when all of the other things are currently taking place? What role and the role of citizens in citizenry in taking the councillors and everyone else to account for their actions? And I think that is the crux of where the responsibility or the ecosystem of local government needs to play a greater role. You have one aspect which is dominating or seem to be dominating, and you have the other aspects of the citizenry which have perhaps, you know, thrown in the towel or are not participating in the way that they should be participating.
Do you think that the involvement of citizens in what is happening, you know, in discussions in their municipalities, do you think that that would radically change how the politicization in the administration currently plays out? So if you had citizens that were more involved, that did attend IDP meetings, that did hold officials to account more than what we see right now, because what's happening now is that things go wrong, and then you see the response from citizens. But there isn't that commitment to say that we're going to start with the process, stay with it, so that there isn't even room for things to go wrong in the way that they do right now.
So how things should be happening currently is that the local government system allows for representatives and a wide variety of representatives, not only political. I think that's the point I will emphasize. It also allows for as well the royal leadership to be form part and parcel of some of the committees that are going to play a role within council. We also then have in the ward, where the ward councillor must be able to have people that, or a committee that they are able to function through, and have that committee of diverse people that are going to play a role in shaping and in guiding and in supporting or in pushing some of the issues within there. So the system of representation is supposed to be that diverse. And those voices with their own diversity should also find expression. But where does the expression, at least, you know, how should it be guided? It must be guided through the legislation that is available for local government. It must align to the constitution of the country. So the issues on the ground in terms of how, for instance, you know, people may form part of a political system because they perceive the fact that, you know, there are extra benefits or additional benefits, then weakens the citizenry, because the active role that a citizen should play is, it's my duty to report if something is broken. It's my duty to point out if something is wrong. And of course, you can argue that you're putting yourself in harm's way in some cases, but it's still your duty. If you see a crime, do you look the other way? Because that crime is something that, you know, is not something, it's something that, you know, may impact you or impact, you know, people around you. So I think the active citizenry role is one that should be taken up more and more, even beyond the boundaries of the political or the you know, so civil society should be playing a greater role to be able to raise, you know, some of the issues, and to raise in some cases just the level of debate, because that is what is actually required. You know, we want to do this and X, Y, Z. Let's shape and add, you know, to what, you know, should be a resolution that is taken within council. And we can track that particular resolution to the point where it's implemented to the letter and to the spirit of what will then benefit the entire society.
I really like what you said about the involvement of civil society and individuals that have really given themselves time to understand processes, to also come in and raise the level of debate and raise the level of conversation. Because sometimes the bar is so low and it is allowed to be there that the things that municipalities and residents are fighting over are actually fundamentals that should be provided, that that it's even a topic of conversation is the problem.
Absolutely. And I think for that sort of role, and we you know, in some of, you know, when the local government was coming in, we would have people who were former teachers, you know, former principals, you know, somewhere in the religious, you know, fraternity, and so on and so forth. And what the key issue or the differentiator with that crop of people who are coming in is that they came with an influence that perhaps comes from maybe the education that, you know, they've had, or the areas where they have been, where at least, you know, they've been able to learn some kind of, you know, a skill that, you know, they can contribute and so on. So I think what civil society brings is the diverse skills which people have. Because in a ward, you will have attorneys, you will have, you know, finance people, you will have, you know, various people that can, you will have engineers as well that are not necessarily working within a local government. And I think the skill of any ward councillor would be to draw on the expertise of the people that live within that particular ward to be able to drive, you know, some of, you know, the agenda. So, and I'm saying, yes, you need to have the kind of and the level of education that is required for you to be able to lead. But you don't have to be a know-it-all. You mm-hmm. don't have to be an engineer, a teacher, and a finance person and this. But if you are able to then create a bench of people who are going to give you the sound advice that you require. At times, you may come with, documents that, require, comments for you to prepare notes to comment, in counsel. Why don't you get someone who is an attorney who is willing to play a role to at least break it down so that you understand, some of the implications. And that is in no way taking away from the intellect of a leader. I think a leader is a person that must be able to draw on the wide and diverse experience of various people. And that is the role of civil society.
All right.
That, they can support, the structures of councillors. They can support, the council itself and the municipality, mm-hmm. where, for instance, it requires the sound advice that it would have to pay perhaps a lot of money to be able to access that sort of advice.
All right. I'm going to start bringing in some of our listeners into this conversation. I want to kick it off with Anonymous. Anonymous, I understand you are a municipal employee. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathy. Yes, I am.
All right.
Kathy, honesty, integrity, upholding professional values is career limiting in the space. It's career limiting in the space, and there can be no solution for what is happening in municipalities unless you fix the political wing of the thing. Political parties are now choosing the lowest in our bar of qualifications and understanding. And this is where the problem is. Because these lowest are being used to achieve certain agendas. Now, I'm going to give you two things that will not help the professionalization, and they are not helping, but they will help this one. Take away Section 57 and Section 56 from the municipality, the appointment of those individuals, municipal manager or city manager, and those reporting to the city manager. Take away those appointments to National Treasury. Because once you take them away, those people are not beholden to politicians at any given moment. Because the threats that they are operating under with respect to their future is enormous. And if you don't get to toe the line, you will be cast out like tomorrow. You are persecuted for just writing and insisting on reports. You are persecuted for just holding service providers to account. You are persecuted not paying for the devious payment certificates. You will be told you pay. You will do anything else later. Now, unless you fix the politics, you are not going to fix or bring professionalization in this system. By the way, in this system is made up of professionals. There is nobody who becomes a city manager. There's nobody who becomes a senior executive in the municipality without holding an appropriate qualification. These are professional people. But the behavior then speaks something else. Let's go to supply chain, Kate, just quickly without taking much of your time.
Mm.
This is my suggestion. I've not written it down. We can fix that space. We can fix that space by having tender evaluations being done under camera. 360 room with cameras and allocating access to those CCTV cameras to professionals across South Africa, selected professionals, so that they can log in at any given moment and observe the evaluation that is being done at a specific metro municipality or municipality. And they will be able to pick up in those documents and what is being done there, what is wrong, and they will fit into the system with their comments. And in that way, those actors at that level will know there's an eye looking at me. Somebody sitting in the University of Western Cape, somebody sitting in UJ, somebody sitting in UK, that has been allowed by South African government to observe. People will act differently.
All right. Anonymous, thanks for calling in with that experience. And it really sounds a lot like it is a lived experience. But we've known that some of these actors are acting out of incredible pressure, and people are having to choose between keeping their jobs and doing what they're told. Now, we can have the moral conversation of whether it's right or wrong for them to do that, but these are the realities that some of these officials in government, in local government, are then faced with. Clinton, you're in Cape Town. Good morning.
Good morning, Cathy, and listeners. I haven't found for a few years, but I don't know where to start. Okay, in 1994, just before the new government came into power, I attended for property from the government, in which I was official. But when the new government came in, I had to wait 3 years to take transfer. I said, but why am I so wait so long? So they said, no, because the money isn't going to that you paid is not going to the municipality, it's going to government. Now, the stories that we always hear that this municipality is owing so much and this municipality is owing that amount and all that, it's all the money is going to government. So, we deceived by a lot of things. The other thing is also my house got demolished here in Observer, not the whole house, the front, two rooms. The plan was already approved in about 50 years ago. And those years you could hold on the stoop and so on. And it's been here for about, it was only here for about 30 years. But because my neighbor, was a tenant, they were complaining because there were like a couple of black people living in my house, you know. And they actually got it right. They got the council to evict the people and got the front demolished. So now again, they're on my case now, the same people. As a complaint because of, I've got some rubble bags in my yard, was actually put there by a neighbor who's at the cop. I mean, he knows it when I'm gone, and he goes into, because I'm a disabled blind person, he puts it in my yard because he doesn't want to go and tip it at the rubble refuse. And the health inspector's been on my case again a couple of times this week. So, you know, sometimes it's also people that are email literate that can send a complaint to the council, and they're quickly on the bandwagon. And my house got demolished. We tried to go and get it to court and all that. And my plan got deleted from the, that was approved, got deleted from the computer. And also I want to thank the council when they respond for water. They, like if you've got a drain that's blocked or whatever on your sidewalk, or your meter stolen in Sunbird, that was very quickly they responded, and I want to thank that councillor in the Sunbird Park area. They react within a day or two, you know. Yeah. So we're very quick on that. So
all right.
Just one. Okay, am I free? Can I just say one last thing?
Quickly.
I applied for a disability grant because I had an accident, and that was 3 years ago. It was approved. I still haven't got the cent. It was approved. The doctor had seen me, filled in the forms. I did complain on the radio about 10 years ago. It went on air, but I've sent him an email, relevant people, and nothing has told me that. I still haven't got my disability grant after that 30 years.
Yeah, Clinton, thanks for calling in. And I think a lot of the issues that you've pointed to are really around efficiencies in municipalities and why it is that often we see that lack of efficiency coming through. So it starts off with just somebody needing a simple issue resolved. When that doesn't happen, it then compounds and it escalates. And before you know it, some individuals are sitting with problems that are really bigger than what they should have been had they been attended to initially. We're going to take a quick break. I'll take more of your calls, and I'll also give Mielane an opportunity.
Across South Africa, online and on radio. SAFM, let's talk.
We continue the conversation on the Talking Point. You're listening to Municipal Watch. And today we're talking about professionalizing local government. What are some of the challenges there? Mielani, I'm going to give you a minute to respond to the callers that we've had so far, because I do have a few more that I want to take.
Yeah, so I think the issue around, you know, the taking the Section 56 and 57 appointments to National Treasury, I think there's something there that, you know, ought to be looked at. Because, you know, whenever, in fact, let me just say, you have two governments, if you want, or systems in government. You have those that are, you know, covered by the Public Service Commission, and then you have local government, which is not part of, you know, that you know, the Public Service Commission. So if you want one government, you want to have, you know, at least, you know, the same policies, principles, procedures, vetting, and all of those things that, you know, should at least be happening at that sort of level. And I think that's maybe the crux of what we're saying. Local government is then left, you know, to, yes, it's autonomous, but, you know, there are things that, you know, when you're talking about government, government should be one government. If, you know, to be employed in government, there is, you know, I think, you know, Z83 form, for instance, you know, in the municipalities, you know, different. So I think we're talking about, you know, even getting the system of how you employ people into the public service, regardless of whether you end up at a province or you'll end up at the national or you'll end up at, you know, municipality, that standard should be the same. And I think that is what, you know, perhaps I can add, you know, to some of, you know, the things that, you know, were being said. Secondly, National Treasury has put out transversal tenders. And transversal tenders are, for instance, you know, we see that, you know, the provision of, you know, water bottles in a, you know, people bring a water bottle at 50 rand, you know, for a 500 ml bottle. And then they then look at, you know, how do we create a standardization as well as a cost effective way of purchasing all of those things from... Mm. You know, so obviously National Treasury won't be able to take care of each and every one of the tenders that are there, because some are specialized, because they are more engineering based, you know, in nature. So there's more, I think, that needs to be done to look at how do you then evaluate, you know, tenders beyond, you know, just looking at the municipality. Yes, the issue of cameras, we hear it, but how do we put tenders so that they are so open that, you know, XYZ, you know, panel from wherever can also evaluate, and will they arrive at the same outcome?
All right.
As the committee would have arrived at.
Baseka Makoti, who sent a message, I think agrees with you, Mielani. He says, we need a national public service template for all government structures, regional and provincial. And, you know, perhaps it's that uniformity that you're alluding to. Butana, you're in Rosebank. Good morning.
Good morning, my sister and your guest there.
Yes.
You cannot, we must forget professionalizing local government with thieves and people that are planted there, crooks, with the intention to collapse government. You must start by eradicating those people. There must be a political will. I mean... what is the general is telling us? There's saving there. Yeah, until you solve that, forget about professionalizing this thing. And I heard Professor, some of the figures, Dr. Ramos, she said, no, we cannot do nothing about the people that have been dead. Those people have to be there, and then they have to, you cannot professionalize those people that are there, that are planted to be cooks. They have to be removed. Mm-hmm. And NPA, so hopeless, can't do that job. The Hawks can't do that job. I mean, this thing have to start from the scratch. This is rocking to the ground.
Yeah.
Go to Madigang. Go to Madigang.
Butana, the problem is that the idea of starting from scratch also is, in a practical sense, it doesn't exist, right? Because the most that will happen is that you'll have a transition from one system into the other. But we can't just, you know, close everything down and then reopen after a month of what we say will be a cleanup.
Well, it's simple, this thing. If there's political will, you get rid of crooks. They are known. Smart is not a secret. They are known. And by the way, they are not limited to local government. People have been killed there in provincial government, in health department.
Okay.
They wish.
Yeah. All right. Butana and Rosebank, let's leave it there. Magdalene and Mangaung, good morning.
Morning, Kathy, at your visitor. Yes. Kathy, there's no way that local government can be professionalized. Number one, comrades are not educated. They know nothing about municipal management, even if they've got the bylaws in front of them, because they can't read them to understand. Number two, only crooks are earmarked in a ANC government. It's a pity it's me who voted for it, who went for it, because of the pitch they gave to me that they are bringing a better life for all. A public participation has been there, but citizens are not listened to. Mm-hmm. Even here on SAFM has been our platform to say this is our government, whereby we are going to put our voices so that we can be heard. They've been listening, they heard, but they've got nothing to do with it because they don't have interest in it. The most important thing that we are going to do, if we who are professionals, who knows public management, who knows public administration, who knows municipal management, we've got to put our votes on the 29th. And say we bring change like we did in 1994.
Okay. Magdalene, thank you for that contribution. Mm. Melanie, you see you've got a minute left. Now you must watch the clock as you speak.
Yeah, I think, you know, we aspects that we did not touch, and I think, you know, Magdalene touched on, levels of education, I think set the standard higher. You know, I think even councillors, when they enter into, you know, municipalities, you know, let them go take a course in public administration or in leadership or, you know, in various areas. And it would be great that if they enter into those positions, they come with a finance background or the persuasion that at least covers, you know, the department that they're going to be leading. The administration as well, the consequence management that I was talking about is crucial, because each and everyone must be held accountable. And unfortunately or fortunately, as an accounting officer, you are accepting a heavy burden to be able to be the referee or the police or the whoever of everyone that is within there. But you as the accounting manager yourself must be of high integrity. Whether the political side, so integrity should be something that drives there, and the quarantining of the fact that, you know, we're dealing with citizens. But I think citizens now have a time, it's their time to at least rise. We know some of, you know, the other formations that are there that are working alongside government or even challenging government or even shaping how government should carry itself. So the professionalization is crucial, that, you know, we lift the bar and we lift, you know, the levels of debate, we lift, you know, the levels of consultation, and all right, we play an active role in that way.
We're going to have to leave it there. Mielani Holeni, he is with the Ndiso Consulting Group. It's time for the latest news update.